Hello, everyone, and thanks for listening to the Quality Hub, Chatting with ISO Experts. I'm your host, Xavier Francis, and I'm here again with Suzanne Strasser, VP of Consulting and Development here at Core Business Solutions. So glad you could be with us again.
Thanks, Xavier. Glad to be back.
For today's show, we'll be talking about the internal audit process, where we look at the processes of the internal audit and the steps to take afterwards and before your Stage 1 audit. But first off, let's learn a little bit more about our guest, a fan favorite, Suzanne Strasser.
Well, here's something you're never going to hear other people say. I love auditing.
Wow. Yes. That's awesome.
I actually remember when I worked for a previous company, we had some training in Georgia, and we were going through the audit process in a mock audit.
Mock audit, okay.
And the company president walked in, and there were like, 4,000 people in the company. And he stood and watched me for a while and gave me a thumbs up. Uh-huh. And our consultant pulled me aside and said, have you ever heard the phrase competence happens in a moment? He said, I think this is kind of your thing.
That's great.
And I love it.
That's awesome. Well, I know many years ago we did a mock audit in here and we did I think we were doing core community at that point, which was
yes.
For some of our customers, which are probably some listening and some of them may have actually seen some of those. And we did a mock audit and we did a how you should do it and how you shouldn't do it. And that was a lot of fun. And I could sense that when we were mocking the audit that you shouldn't do, you were still a little annoyed, like, I've been here. I've done this. This is exactly what it's like. So, but anyway, this is the internal audit, which we're talking about. That was actually a mock audit and also a mock management review,
yes,
I believe it was.
Yes.
Well, it's great to have you here again. And like I said, we are at the internal audit stage of our quality management system implementation. At this point, businesses will either do their own internal audits or have someone outside the organization like us do it for them. Let's not get this confused with the actual certification audit. Internal audits are something that you have to do,
yes,
but you can't audit your own process. So a lot of companies will ask outside people who are not a registrar to do that initial internal audit. Can you go through some of those things?
Sure. Yeah, it's a requirement in the standard that you do your own internal audit prior to the external audit, as part of your management system, just part of your daily yearly management system activities.
You're auditing the things you need to audit.
Yes. And in my mind, the audit is really designed to do four different things.
Okay.
So first, it wants you to check to see if you conform to your own requirements.
So those things you set up in the past, we've talked about this is
yes,
how we're going to manage this.
You've got written procedures or policies. They should be checked to make sure you're doing what you've said.
Okay.
Second, the audit should really see if you're conforming to the standards requirements. We've been talking about 9001, so it would be, are you meeting all of those requirements stated in ISO 9001?
Now, wouldn't you have also sort of checked that box if, when you're setting up those processes and things in the past, that you're doing it as you say you're doing it? Should you not have planned that ahead of time? And this is just a double check?
Yes, but you may not have implemented those things that you
okay,
said.
All right. So you said we're going to do it, but we haven't done them yet. Okay.
You never know.
Yeah. Well, this is continuous improvement.
Yes.
So.
Third, I think the audit really should review, and it says this in a standard, it should review whether your QMS is effectively implemented. So that's kind of just what we were talking about.
Yep.
You could have said things, but really didn't implement them. This kind of raises the game a little bit. It's not just saying, they're following their procedures, check. It's really saying, how effective have they been? And one way to look at that is through metrics, which is why we stress how important they are.
Right. You're looking at specific numbers, specific details of, have we met it? Are we achieving it? We're reviewing it, auditing it to see what we might have to change to make
right,
it better.
So for example, if you're auditing and you find the company is at 50% on-time delivery and they have 30% returns and 2 out of 5 on customer satisfaction, for example, that's not really effectively implemented. And then I think the fourth thing an audit does, and this is not really in the standard, but it's to provide assurance to the management team.
They're supposed to be so involved.
They're the sponsor of this too.
Yep.
They want to make sure that your processes are implemented as you intended.
So those four things are looking at what you've done, make sure you're following how you said you're going to do it, mm-hmm. make sure it meets the standard. Mm-hmm. Are you effectively implemented and you're meeting your goals and you're assuring management that you're doing all those three?
Exactly right. Very good. Yep. So all that to say is I think auditing is not for the weak. That may be a little bit of a bold statement, but you really have to stand your ground. You can't be wishy-washy. You have to be factual. The standard, like you said before, it does say you need to select auditors that conduct audits to ensure objectivity and impartiality.
That's why you can't audit your own.
Yes. And in a small organization, that's really hard to do.
I bet.
So a lot of companies choose to outsource the audit process, not only for the objectivity, but also for the sheer resources it takes.
I think Brian mentioned that before where, yeah, you say you can be objective, but when it's your buddy that you have lunch with.
Or your boss.
Or your boss. That's a really good point. You know, or somebody that has authority over you. How critical do you really want to be?
Plus, you have to keep people trained and it takes time away from their job. It's really hard to do internally.
Well, at least do it well.
Yes.
Where you're going to have some sort of sense that it's really achieving what it should.
Yes.
Okay. So it's very possible and probably likely, I would think, that you're going to have some findings during this internal process.
Yes.
How should you review and proceed once you see what those findings are?
Okay, so let's talk about what we mean by findings first, because that's a term that has a lot of different meanings.
Yeah, and it kind of gives a little bit of almost like a CSI kind of thing, like we found something.
Yeah.
Here's a clue. What's wrong? Not unlike the audit word.
Right. So a finding, and you hear the word nonconformance, it really should be tied back to a requirement that is not being met.
In the standard.
This shouldn't be somebody's opinion. You know, the auditor has an obligation to write the statement in a way that it's a fact, like in 4 out of 5 customer purchase orders sampled, there was no evidence of a review being done as per section 823 in ISO 9001:2015.
So it's
that's a finding.
To the letter. Yeah. The finding says, nope, you did not achieve this in the standard.
Yes. But because this is an internal audit, you also want auditors to write up helpful improvement suggestions, which could be worded like, the company should consider having a backup reviewer for customer purchase orders when the primary person is out of office.
Right, right. And that would be that's another good reason why having an external auditor do your internal audit is helpful.
Exactly. People come with a lot of preconceived notions when they're doing their own internal audit, and it's good to step away from that. Once you have identified those findings and agreed on them, because there can be a little back and forth with the auditor and maybe the owner of the process to make sure they're clarified.
Some of this is also, like you said, we're doing what we said we were going to do. Mm-hmm. Is there a clear understanding of this is how we were planning on doing that, achieving that?
Right. So then the standard says you're supposed to take appropriate correction and corrective action without undue delay. Wow.
What's undue delay?
You know.
Yeah.
Right away.
Nebulous much?
Yeah. To me, any findings from your internal audit should really generate a formal corrective action. And we can talk down the road maybe if that statement's true for subsequent audits, because some people think maybe you don't have to. But I say write that corrective action. It's good to have some in your system anyway.
Right. And I mean, that's probably something that when you get to your certification on it, they can see you've done corrective actions. So that's something that's going to be beneficial for you in the real certification and surveillance audits moving forward.
And then you have to prioritize them based on risk and how much of an impact they could have on your management system.
Well, and this is another good reason to have some form of central location where you can document this stuff with your corrective actions and your nonconformances. One reason we use the core compliance system here, it gives you the ability to keep these things, these records, make them formal.
Yeah, it's very nice to keep everything all together and generate reports and all that. So yeah, the next step then would be to, you know, develop your action plan to address your finding, you know, including determining root cause, which is part of the process.
How many whys? And as many as needed,
There's no magic number about 5, but sometimes you have to go there.
Even a little further than 5.
Sometimes. You know, make sure you identify who's responsible for all the steps. That's a big thing. And make sure you're realistic about your timelines. Then, you know, obviously implement what you've intended, which may mean you have to update some procedures, train some folks, put some other things in place.
And again, this is not a reflection on the individual employees.
Not at all.
It's about the process and their place within the process and making sure that we all know that process and how to follow it.
That, exactly right. Yep. And then once you've made your changes, you really have to verify that you've been effective in what you've changed. So did you really address the issue that you had initially?
Does it solve the problem?
Does it solve the problem? Yep. And you may need follow-up audits at this point if it's that severe, or other ways to review to determine whether your corrective actions are working as you intended.
Okay.
And there's different schools of thought about keeping the audit open during this activity. We don't typically advise that. You know, close it out, close out your reports, and then let the corrective action process drive the completion of the findings.
When would you look at the results of the steps you took? And another audit?
Yes. Yes. You'd go back and look at those corrective actions in the next audit, make sure that they're closed out.
And management review would probably be an important thing
here as
well.
Ah, yes, I think we're going to talk about that next.
Yes, yes, we are going to talk about that. Okay. So that would lead to, okay, did this stuff work? Did we fix it? Did we not? Mm-hmm. Management steps in, and we have that second management review. We've already talked about the first one before the internal audit. Now we're looking at that second management review. We've already talked about a little bit of its purpose, but what are its purpose and outputs from that management review?
Sure. Well, this is part of our CORE's process, really, to prepare customers. There's nothing that says you need another management review in the standard, nothing that says you need it prior to your audit. However, we've seen enough registrar findings that, you know, when we don't do this, and the theory is that one management review input is that you have to review your audit results. So if you have your management review before your audit, well, guess what? You don't have those results to review.
Exactly.
And if you wait and have your management review after your audit, then you haven't audited a complete management review. So it's all circular. Right?
It's a circular.
So just have two.
Just do it. Even though it's not in the standard, you're probably going to get caught if you didn't.
Yeah. We advise having one full one before the internal audit and then one after. It's good practice. Make sure you're addressing all your requirements of management review before the audit. And in that second one, you're going to talk specifically about findings from the internal audit and how you're addressing them.
Which, again, one of the big points in the standard is that management involvement. And imagine if you are somebody who performed the internal audit. Mm-hmm. You were part of that investigation, and the management doesn't do anything. They don't talk about it. They don't look at results.
Exactly.
They don't approve changes you might work.
Yeah.
It's going to be a defeating thing.
So, yes.
Well, it really shows the responsibility that management is taking for the QMS.
Yes. Yep.
All right. So that's done. Mm-hmm. We've gotten through our first internal audit.
Well, and that's a big milestone, because at this point you can say that you're compliant.
Okay. That's a great way to look at it.
Yes.
So after the internal audit, you can actually say we're compliant to the standard. You haven't been certified yet.
Correct.
But you're complying to those required parts of the standard. So we do want to go in and get ready for that big certification audit, which is in two stages. Mm-hmm. The first one is called the stage one audit. How do we prep for that coming out of an internal audit and a management review?
Pray? There's a number of things you can do, really, to prepare. And remember that the stage one, and we've talked about this, is a readiness review, right? So the external auditor is going to check to make sure that you have everything in place that meets the requirements and that you're ready to move on to the next phase, which is the stage two audit.
So stage one does come from an outside body.
Yes.
That is from your registrar, which is a certified body, to audit for your certification. And they're double checking and making sure you have everything in place to have that second stage two audit.
So obviously you want to do a double, triple check before they look at your stuff, right? You want to make sure all your documents are released. You want to make sure that you have internal audit results available. You have some corrective actions that are completed. Your management review is complete. And you want to make sure you know where things are. That's also important that we kind of train our clients on, you know, how to navigate, how to find things, how to pull things up and have them ready for the registrar.
There's certain things that are going to be audited and there's going to be certain people that are going to be within that part of the audit.
Yes.
Is that required at this point in prepping?
I wouldn't say required, but you definitely want to provide that information to your registrar auditor. They typically ask for it ahead of time.
So they know this is what I'm going to be covering. This is who I'm going to be talking to.
Yes. So they can set an agenda and get people, you know, prepared to be, especially nowadays if it's remote.
Yes. Yes.
You want to have people available.
We're going to be reviewing stage one and stage two next week in our podcast. So make sure you guys tune back in if you're really interested in this auditing thing. And if you love them as much as Suzanne
like
does,
do.
Like
yes.
She does. Yes. Found her niche. And we're going to be covering some of the other things about remote audits and things like that as well. Is there anything else? Maybe since you love auditing, you may have a good story or a great experience other than the thumbs up that the guy gave you that you might would like to share with us today.
Just that, you know, if you are the auditor, it's important to make sure that people are at ease as much as during the external audit. And we know that people will freak out during the external audit, but also for the internal audit, it's kind of a test and it's a practice run. But it's good, obviously, to put people at ease. So let them talk a little bit about what they do.
Let them take some ownership in
it. Yeah, absolutely.
Don't be belligerent or argue with your auditor, but it's okay to share your point of view on how we're doing it.
Yes, yes. And kind of leave your baggage and, you know, previous experience at the door. You may have seen this process 100 times, but, you know, it's new to them. The people that you're auditing. And so just, you know, respect that.
Well, that's great to hear. Really appreciate this input. We're getting close.
Yay.
Next week, we're going to talk about that wonderful certification audit with a member of our audit team. And I believe you're going to be involved in that as well,
Suzanne.
I think
so. Yep.
So we really appreciate you being here today. This is always a great time having you here.
Thank you.
And thanks to everyone here who's listened to our podcast today. We hope it's been informative, enlightening, and you're understanding a little bit more about this whole quality management thing that we've been talking about. Be sure to check out our Quality Hub podcast next week, where we will be covering stage one and stage two audit and its complexities. Thanks so much for being here, and have a great day.